Link's manifested shadows. You have to fight. If you won't do it for yourself, then you do it for me. His gaze snaps to mine. What happens to me if you turn? My hands curl at my sides. What happens to Tairn and Sigale if you give in? Zayden's jaw flexes. Do Venom get once-a-week visits? I take a step closer and lift my chin. Does their bond survive you turning? Does ours? You and I are tethered for life, Zayden Ryerson. Am I expected to turn with you? Is that the only way to keep our dragons alive if you give up? 1,000 emotions flit across his face. And then, they're gone. He's on the ice. My stomach flips. Stay, I demand. Or meet me in Aracia. The man I love stays. He fights. Ryerson, Llewellyn asks from the doorway of the Great Hall. Luceris wants a word regarding mining production. You have to accept what I already have, Zayden says to me. The man you love no longer fully belongs to himself. He walks past Llewellyn into the Great Hall, taking my heart with him. I just fought with every weapon in my arsenal, and it wasn't enough. My shoulders slump in defeat as I lean against the wall. I'm not entirely sure what that was about, but I've seen how hard it can be to love someone in power. Llewellyn grimaces sympathetically. Wearing a title like his can sometimes feel like you're a fraying rope, being continuously ripped apart between what you personally want and what your people need. What about what he needs? I ask. Llewellyn pauses, as though choosing his words carefully. He needs you to keep him from fraying, which can sometimes mean putting what you want or need aside for the good of the province. It's horribly unfair to ask that of anyone, let alone the first lightning wielder in a century. Llewellyn's voice softens. I have the utmost respect for you, Cadet Sorengale. But this is a crucial time that will determine the path of the province for the next millennium. Your purpose is as great as his in a wholly separate arena. And if that purpose makes it impossible for you to be what Tirindor needs. Tirindor, not Zayden? I'm fighting for both, but he doesn't know that. To his ears, he stumbled into an argument where I just asked Zayden to stay with me instead of tending to Tirish business. A guard shifts, reminding us both that we're not alone. They are now one and the same. He says it with such kindness, it's hard to be angry. You are both so young, with such formidable signets. And if you choose not to adapt to the challenges his title brings. He stops himself, then sighs. I just hope you two will figure out the balance between it all. Like hell am I giving him up, even though nothing about what he laid out sounds equal or balanced. By balance, you mean Tirindor comes first, Zayden second, our relationship fights for third, and my personal needs are a matter of convenience. Saying it aloud puts it all in harsh perspective. Something like that. Sadness pulls at the corners of his mouth. Zayden comes first for me. It comes out so self-sacrificial that I half expect my mother to appear and smack me upside the back of my head. Just so we're clear. But I will never stop being the woman he fell in love with in order to morph into whatever doormat you think he requires. We're already balanced because we're both strong for ourselves and each other. He needs me to be me. And I'm telling you, I promised to help keep Tirindor safe, but not at his expense. He'll say the same about you. It's what makes your relationship so dangerous. He sighs. Like I said, it's hard to love someone in power. And that goes both ways. He slips back into the hall and shuts the door. But Zayden isn't in power. He is power. And he's slipping. Let me know if he leaves, I tell Tairn, and then I head to class. Zayden flies out 2 hours later. An excerpt from Article 1, Section 2, The Dragon Rider's Codex. A dragon determines its last flight and its riders. Chapter 47. You're sure you only want me here the first time you try this? I ask Sawyer 2 days later as we stand in the middle of the flight field with Tairn and Darna and Sleeg at 4:30 a.m. I'm not exactly the best one to catch you if this goes poorly. He tightens the straps on his pack. No, but you're the only one I want seeing if I fall on my ass. Or going for help if you break your leg? A small smile plays across his mouth. Let's hope that doesn't happen. Do you want to talk about this? I gesture to Sleeg. Thanks, but I've been talking to Jacinia. I'm ready. I need you for the more practical side of this. He nods towards Sleeg, then crouches down, then pulls on a lever on the inside of his prosthesis. A flat 2-inch-wide piece of metal with a curved end pops out of the toe of his boot. And it's not my first time. I need a second opinion because it didn't go so well for me yesterday. You made that? It's pretty damn cool. Yeah, he stands, then stares at Sleeg's left front leg. The red sword tail is smaller than Sigail, but his talons are still enormous, given what Sawyer's about to try. His scale pattern in this one row doesn't overlap. He points upward. And in theory, the hook should just catch the top of each scale as I climb. But I can't get there without fall. Sleeg lifts his head over us and breathes out a huff of steam that I'm going to have to wipe off my goggles. Ugh, it's too early to be sticky. I wasn't talking about you, Sawyer argues. It's not like we haven't discussed the scale pattern, and you don't have to. Sleeg steams us again, the heat stinging my face. If he gets it any hotter, he's going to blister my skin. Tairn stalks forward and tilts his head at Sleeg in a way I never want to see aimed at me, and Andarna is quick to follow. Because I don't want you to have to, Sawyer shouts up at Sleeg, who narrows his eyes. This would be a really ridiculous way to die.
He wouldn't dare, Tairn warns.
Just let me try it, Sawyer argues. Sleeg bares his teeth. Sawyer bares his right back. I will never understand the relationships other riders have with their dragons, I say down the bond. I barely understand my own, but giving Andarna a wide berth seems to be working since she's here. Not that she could stay behind for the length of our rotation, but I'm declaring it a victory.
You're not supposed to, Tairn remarks.
Here we go. Sawyer rolls his shoulders, then runs towards Sleeg's claw. He makes it 2 steps before the tip of his boot catches in the mud and he falls forward. Shit. I lunge for his pack and grab hold with both hands, yanking Sawyer upright before he yucks a set of flight leathers. My shoulders both pop, but the joints have the decency not to subluxate on me.
Thanks,
Sawyer mutters, staring at the boot. See? I do. I crouch to peer at the device. Can you kick the lever open? In theory, he answers, but it's probably a little small for that, and I don't have time to make changes before movement today. Well, let's try it as it is. You can modify in Erasia. None of us want you to stay behind. Mud squishes under my boots as I stand. You can run, right? Sawyer nods. I wouldn't try this if I couldn't. My gait is off because I can't quite get the flex right, and I'm just not nimble enough to run the full length of his leg like I used to. We can work with that, I nod. How about you run just like you'd mount before, and right when you feel your momentum shift, like you're about to fall back, kick the lever open. It should catch your foot just like you designed it to, and you can climb the rest of the way. Sawyer looks down at me. That's how you did the gauntlet, isn't it? Kind of. I waited until I felt my weight shift backward, then stabbed a dagger into the wood and pulled myself up. But I somehow doubt Sleeg would be appreciative of that approach. A corner of my mouth lifts. Sleeg huffs another breath, this time without steam, as if in agreement. I'll give it a shot. Sawyer pops the lever closed, then nods to himself. Here we go. He takes off running and Sleeg flexes his talons, flattening his claw. Sawyer's long legs eat up the first half dozen feet of the climb, and I hold my breath when his progress stalls. He kicks the lever, then clings to Sleeg's leg about halfway up, his foot scraping the scales for a place to grip for a heart-stopping second before it catches. You've got it! I shout. Climb! His left boot holds steady, working as he'd designed, but his right slips, leaving a streak of mud down Sleeg's red scales. My chest clenches as he tries again, then again with the same result. Fuck! He yells, then lays his forehead against Sleeg's leg. I can flatten the tip of my tail and boost him, Andarna offers, having crept closer. Now my ribs tighten for a whole different reason. It's the first positive thing she's said since our return. That's an honorable offer, I tell her, then repeat it to Sawyer. No, he shouts. Thank you, but no. Sleeg rumbles low in his chest, and I stand there helplessly, knowing there's nothing I can do. Because it's not the same, Sawyer argues, frustration rumbling through his tone, and I know he isn't talking to me. You're the one who took a risk on me, and I won't ask you to dishonor— He falls quiet. Is that how you feel when you dip your shoulder for me? I ask Taryn. Dishonored? I am the second largest dragon on the continent, and a revered warrior. My tales are legendary, my mate unparalleled, my feats unmatched. Doesn't change my question. I cut him off before he starts to list his accolades. It would take a great deal more than a change of posture to dishonor me, he replies. But you never had to lower yourself before me, did you? Not for Naolin, or we do not speak of the one who came before. Agonizing pain floods the bond, and I immediately regret my choice of words. Andarna lifts her head and narrows her accusing golden eyes at me. I know. I put my hands up in the universal sign of surrender. You know that's not how I feel about it, Sawyer says as his arms start to tremble. We've been over this. Any rider would have done the same in my position. He shakes his head and reaches for the next scale, then pulls himself upward, gaining a foot of hard-fought distance. Of course I don't blame you. That's not— His head whips sideways towards Sleek's. No, I'm not punishing. For Amari's sake, will you just let me get a word in? From the silence that follows, Sleeg does not comply. I shift my weight as my pack grows heavier by the minute, and my lower spine stops whining and starts shouting. Because my leg was and still is worth your life, Sawyer snaps when he can't reach the joint of the next scale. Of course you're allowed to feel the same. His hand slides back to its previous hold. Oh. Sleeg huffs, then extends his left leg, sliding his claw through the mud. Slowly, it lowers to a walkable degree of incline. My throat tightens as Sawyer lets go and slowly rises. He extends his arms outward, like a cadet on parapet, then trudges upward step by step as I catch movement in my peripheral vision. Your year mates arrive, Taryn says. I keep my eyes locked on Sawyer as he reaches the top of Sleeg's shoulder and lowers his arms. His next movements look like a routine he's performed thousands of times, and with a few quick steps, he finds the seat. Sleeg rises to his full height as Sawyer settles in, and I back away for a better view. Looks like you've been up there a time or two, I call to him as he relaxes in the seat. Feels like I never left, he shouts down with a grin. I can ride. You can ride. I agree, my smile instant and wide. Now, does it matter how you got there, or only that he chose you? You know the answer to that already. His smile softens. I do. I nod, then turn to Andarna, narrowing the pathway to just her. Look at me. She spares me a glance. You can grieve. If my words don't work, maybe hers will. Golden eyes lock on mine. You can grieve, I repeat. And when and if you're ready to talk about it, I'll be here. You do not talk about your grief, she counters. Neither does he. Her tail flicks in Tarn's direction. She has a point. I'm getting there, I say slowly. And he's not perfect either. Her nostrils flare and her scales shimmer to the purple-toned black she usually prefers. I nod and let the subject drop, but it definitely feels like progress. Thank Amari, Ree whispers as she comes up on my left side, grinning up at Sawyer.
Sawyer, look at you! Riddick runs forward, his arms up in victory. Sleeg swings his head and snaps his teeth shut a few feet in front of Riddick. Look at you from a distance, Riddick retreats, his arms still held high. When he bumps into Marin, he turns and sweeps her into a hug as she laughs.
I couldn't help, Ree says quietly as Sawyer focuses on reacquainting himself with the seat. Did I fail him?
No, you were exactly who he needed you to be. I slip my arm through hers.
Fuck, this pack is heavy.
You're our friend, but you're also our squad leader. He doesn't want to fall in front of you. None of us do. We want to make you proud. And I know you're used to being responsible for us, and you're truly exceptional at your job.
Riddick puts Marin down, then reaches for Kat, who accepts his hug with straight arms and an annoyed eye roll.
But, Ree glances at me sideways. But you couldn't have made this happen any faster. We walk toward the others, not you or me or Riddick or Jacinia.
It was always down to the two of them.
It was only ever going to be on their timeline. Riddick spins toward Nev, and the third-year flyer looks at him like he's grown another set of eyeballs as she dodges his embrace and bumps into Bragan. He whirls toward Imogen, who puts up her hand as she walks by with Quinn.
Don't even think about it, Gamlin, she warns. You're so warm and fuzzy, Quinn says, slinging her arm around Imogen's shoulders. Only to you, she looks up at Sawyer. Nice to see you where you belong, Henrik.
Riddick spins and throws his arms around Dane, who lifts his brows, then slowly brings his hand up and pats Riddick's back twice in an awkward exchange.
Looking good, Sawyer, Dane calls up, then continues on toward Kath. Good job, Mateus, Bodhi says to Ree as he walks by. Got your cadet back in the seat.
I didn't, she starts, and I squeeze her arm with mine.
He did it himself, but we're proud of him. Thank you, section leader.
Bodhi nods with a smile that looks so close to Zayden's, my whole rib cage draws tight. Neither Bodhi nor Dane had the chance to take the rune course because of their duty schedules and our failed mission, so we get them both on our rotation.
Look at him! Riddick races our way and smooshes us in a hug. All is right with the world.
His arms slacken and he draws back, his gaze soaked in apology.
I mean, other than what's going on with Ryerson.
I know what you meant. I shift my pack and force a smile. And hopefully I'll see him there.
Hope stows away like a little windproof passenger as we launch for Aracia, and somehow lives through the night when we make camp just inside the Tirish border.
Have to admit, it's freeing to fly without worry that we're about to be spotted by a wyvern patrol or found by Theophany. Only once we're sure the griffins can still handle the altitude after being gone for months do we start the final leg of the trip, entering the lone protection of the Aracian wards. Landing in the valley above Aracia that evening feels like coming home. But Zayden isn't here. Or Sigale isn't, which means the same thing.
This sucks, I tell Tarn with a heavy sigh. He growls in agreement.
And Darna snaps at Kaori when he walks a little too close over Panchek's blustering protest, then takes off after a herd of sheep as I dismount from Tarn.
I'm sorry, the professor says, knitting his dark, slashing brows. I didn't mean you did, I interrupt.
and I sympathize with why you've come. But she's not going to let you study her, not even here.
I understand.
Kaori nods, then looks around the high-hanging valley with its lush green foliage and snow-tipped peaks.
Selfishly, I also wanted to see how this Empyrean functions. I suspect it's why Pancheck has tagged along as well.
A smile tugs at my mouth. Good luck asking them. You ready? Rhiannon asks as she approaches with footsteps that border on bouncing. Yeah, I flat out grin at my friend's happiness. Let's get down there so you can see your family.
I'd prefer we hold formation, Dane starts as he comes up on my right.
Rhiannon and I both level a look on him.
Tomorrow morning, he quickly corrects course. Family first and all.
Family first, Rhiannon agrees with a quick smile, and he passes by, heading toward the rocky path down to the house.
I get that he has to come for rune training too, but why our squad?
Rhi whispers.
Same reason I'm here. Bodhi pops up on our left and lifts his face to the sun like he's greeting an old friend. This is the best squad.
I forgot how fucking hot this place is, Riddick says, unbuttoning his flight jacket.
It's a hatching ground, Rhiannon reminds him with a wide grin. I bet it's almost the same temperature as the Vale with how many dragons are here now.
We beat the storm. But I bet it lowers the temperature tomorrow. I flick the buttons open on my jacket, well aware I'll be freezing the second we cross the magical barrier that defines this territory as the hatching grounds. Sure enough, it's glacial by the time we make it down to Ryerson House.
God, just the sight of it makes me miss him.
The squad files past the guards and through the front doors into the massive entryway that looks up 5 full stories set into the mountain like giant steps. It's quiet for this time of day. Or maybe it just seems empty because the halls are no longer bustling with cadets. Kaori turns around with a stunned look of disbelief. Felix pats him on the back, then says something to Rhiannon before leading Kaori away.
Eyes on me, Rhiannon's voice echoes, earning everyone's attention. Find your bunks as previously assigned. The night is yours to do what you want. But formation is at 7 tomorrow, so I'd think twice about finding a tavern.
We break and climb the first flight of stairs.
Let's get out of here as quickly as possible, Rhi tells Marin just ahead of me.
I can't wait to see my brothers.
Marin claps excitedly, light catching on the long silver scar on the back of her hand. Pretty sure there's not a single one of us who has come through the last few years unmarked in some way.
Kat, are you coming?
I wouldn't mind seeing the little terrors, she says with a nod as we reach the landing.
Vi?
Rhi asks over her shoulder.
Sure,
I answer with a quick nod. I love your family.
Sawyer and I are going too, Riddick heads up to the third floor.
All right, Rhi calls up the stairs as she climbs. Whoever wants to go to my house, we meet in the foyer in 40 minutes, which should give you a chance to bathe and change. My mother will boot you out of her house if you walk in smelling like sulfur, and I'm not even kidding.
I pause on the landing, my gaze flickering from the steps ahead to the hallway on my left.
Please don't tell me you're lost, Bodhi says, coming up the steps last.
Of course not, I shake my head slowly. It's just that I don't have a room here, and I'm not sure where I should sleep.
He scoffs and gestures down the hall.
You have a room. It hasn't moved.
It's his room, I correct him quietly. And he's all broody.
We're home, Vi.
Act like it. He grins, then turns around me, walking backward down the hallway on the right.
Sleep in your bed. He'll just brood harder if you don't.
I sigh when he disappears into his room, and then turn left and head to mine.
Hours.
The handle won't turn, so I flick my wrist and picture the mechanism opening, using lesser magic to unlock it. Walking in is surreal. Magic tingles across my skin when I step through the wards. It looks just like we left it in December, except most of our things are now at Besgaeth.
After shutting the door, I swing my pack from my shoulders and set it on the chair Zayden waited in for all those days while I slept after being stabbed over resin. The bedding is the same dark blue, the curtains beside the massive windows are open to the evening light, and every book in his collection is exactly where it belongs on the built-in shelves to my right. There are a few pitiful attempts at tempered runes on the desk, left from my last lesson, along with a forgotten notebook in the top drawer. I check the armoire and find one of my sweaters, a uniform for each of us, and the blanket his mother made him tucked up in the right-hand corner. And gods, does it smell like him. My chest threatens to split straight open at the sudden acute stab of pure longing. I've left my mark here, too. The bathing chamber still smells like the soap I use on my hair, and I find the bar right where I left it. I take a few minutes to clean up, then dress in a fresh uniform, half expecting Zayden to walk in at any second and ask me about my day. It's almost like this room is removed from time itself, a tiny corner of the world where we simultaneously live together, yet don't. The only indication months have passed is the glass box from Zelna on his nightstand, and the emerald-hilted blade of Aracia resting within. It's missing a single stone near the top, but looks no worse for wear after having been in Navarian possession for 600 years. Someone knocks on the door and I glance at the clock. Has it already been 40 minutes? I swing open the door and find Brennan on the other side. His eyes are tired, but his smile is bright as he gives me the standard sibling once-over. Can't help it. I do it too, coming away satisfied that he's not wearing any new scars. Pull me in. He holds out his hand. He fucked with the wards the last time he was here. Of course he did. I grab my brother's hand and pull him through. He immediately yanks me into a hug. I soak up the rare moment of peace until he steps back, having lost his smile sometime in the last 10 seconds. Do you need anything mended? No, I shake my head. Are you sure? Because every time you show up here, you're an inch from death. He studies me like I might be lying. I'm sure. Good. He kicks the door closed. Sound shield only works with the door shut, right? Right. I retreat a few steps in apprehension. What's wrong? Brennan's face falls and he stares at the ground. I can't mend him. I have no idea who you're talking about. I lift my brows in utter confusion. We're all healthy. No one was hurt on the way here. He looks up, and the sorrow in his eyes sends me staggering back. Zayden. I can't mend him, Vi. I tried every day that he was here last week. I struggle to draw adequate breath. You know. I know. He nods once. He must be further along than Jack had been when Nolan started working with him. I'm so sorry. That unit of measurement is unfathomable. Me too. We tried silent offerings in every local temple, pushing magic back into the earth, even sitting with the eggs in the hatching grounds. We've tried everything either of us could think of, though the letter he sent from Llewellyn yesterday had a weird... He looks at me like I've grown horns. Are you smiling? Yesterday? I don't even try to fight the hopeful little curve. Brennan nods. He wants to try mending the spot at Besgaeth. Good idea. There's nothing small about my grin now. He might be broody, but he hasn't given up. An excerpt from The Resurgence of Evil, A Timeline by Pearson Hollowell. 472 AU, Willhaven, Breivik. With the exception of one house, the village was desiccated overnight by a single Venon estimated to be a sage. The only adult amongst the three survivors described her as astonishingly ageless, hair as black as the day we married. But in place of the age lines I'd expected were bulging scarlet veins.
branching outward from her red-ringed eyes.
Chapter 48.
Thunder rattles my bedroom windows the next night as I pore over the pages of the latest book Takara sent, letting my hair dry. He hasn't forgotten our deal, even now that he's king, and I'm not giving up on Zayden, especially when it's clear he hasn't given up on himself. The answer is out there somewhere, and we'll find it. Having Brennan in the know only bolsters that hope. Maybe he can't mend Zayden, but there's never been a problem my brother couldn't solve. I glance over at the mess of practice runes on my desk and momentarily debate working on the delayed activation rune Trissa spent most of the afternoon drilling into us. Its purpose is to take an existing dormant rune and turn it on by tempering more magic into it. Its actual use? Nothing, since I can't make the damn thing work. Kat got it right on the first try. Imogen followed quickly after. Kai singed the ends of his spiky black hair. Dane, Bodhi, Rhee, Riddick, everyone eventually mastered one except me. Even Arik, who has yet to manifest a signet, managed the intricacy of the lesser magic. Whatever. We're here for 2 weeks. Eventually I'll get it right. And if I don't, then that's why we work in squads. I don't have to be good at everything. I tug the perpetually slipping strap of my Devarelli silk nightdress back up on my shoulder and flip the page into Karis's book. My brows rise at the next passage I read, and I go over it once more to be sure I've caught on to a pattern. That makes three. Thunder sounds again, and power rises within me like it's been called by a friend to come play. I watch the rain that seems to be coming in sideways from the east, then grab the conduit off my nightstand and let it flow. Felix graduated the alloy in the center to the same size as those that power the daggers. And I may as well multitask and get his homework done while I read. Dune knows he's going to expect at least three of them to be imbued before hauling me up the mountains tomorrow for yet more practice. He's training me like I'm the only thing standing between the Venin and Aracia, and with the wards declining every day, I can't fault him. With Zayden handling province matters and Llewellyn, I'm the best thing we've got against Theophany. At least, offensively. Someone knocks at my bedroom door. I close the book and stash it on my nightstand with the conduit, then climb off my bed to answer the door. It's after 10, which means it's either Rhee, wanting to chat like last night, or Brennan, looking for a partner to raid the kitchens. Either way, this gown is practically see-through, so I grab a robe from the armoire on my way. Glittering onyx taps against my shields a breath away from the threshold, and I abandon the robe's tie to yank open the door. My heartbeat stutters, then flies. Zayden stands in the doorway in flight leathers soaked to the bone, rain dripping from his hair. War rages in his eyes like this is both the last and only place he wants to be. Hi. My hand flexes on the door handle. Why didn't you tell me he was here? I ask Taren.
You didn't ask to be made aware of his arrival, only his departure.
Fucking semantics.
Tell me to go, and I will,
Zayden says, his voice coming out like it's been scraped over coals.
It's only been 73 days.
Come here. I let the handle go and step back to make space. You must be freeze. 1 second he's standing in the hallway, and the next, his hands are in my hair and his mouth is on mine. Gods, yes, his lips are cold, but his tongue is deliciously warm as it strokes into my mouth. The kiss wakes up every nerve ending in my body and reminds me just how long it's been since Devarelli. Between traveling, our close confines with other riders, and his fear of losing control, it's been too many weeks since I've felt his skin against mine. One kiss from him is all it takes for power to hum along my skin, for need to override any and all thoughts besides closer and more. It's always closer and more when it comes to him. The door shuts somewhere in the background, and I hear the click of a lock, the thud of his pack hitting the floor, the drag of wet leather as he undoes the clasp of his back scabbard, then slides it over his shoulders, never once breaking the kiss. He takes my mouth just like he did the first time, wholly, completely, like he's given himself permission to be reckless, and he's going to make the most of it.
He sucks my tongue into his mouth, and I whimper at the frenzy whipping through me, at how much I've missed the physical contact between us. My hands rise to his chest, and the chill of his jacket sends a shiver down my back. How long was he flying in that storm? I push gently. Wait. He immediately pauses, lifting his head just enough to look in my eyes.
I shouldn't be here, I know, not yet at least.
That isn't what I meant. I slip my fingers between the buttons of his flight jacket and hold on to the fabric like we can solve every problem in the world if he just stays in this room with me. Of course you should be here. I just thought you were in Llewellyn.
I was.
His focus drops to my lips and heats so quickly that I almost regret stopping him.
Then I launched for Tervain and ended up in our home.
The words come slowly, like they're being ripped from him.
Or at least, it will be after you graduate and we're both assigned here.
It's already home. My pulse jumps. I can't remember the last time he talked about the future with anything but dread. You flew 9 hours in the wrong direction, I tease, undoing the top button of his flight jacket, then the next.
Well, the fuck, aware, he whispers with a hint of a smirk.
I'd been pissed and skating that mental ice in Llewellyn. But I held my shit together instead of punching the two men who raised me after Dad died. He searches my eyes like I might condemn him for the admission, but I simply work my way down his buttons and listen. We were beyond the wards, but I didn't reach for any form of power because even in that state, I knew it could take me back to day zero, and day zero doesn't give me you. I clawed my way back to myself and left.
You kept your control.
Pride has a smile tugging at my mouth as I free his last button. He nods.
I'm not ignoring my fate. I know there will come a point in time where I'll become more it than me.
He swallows.
But as dangerous as hope is, you're right, I have to fight for this.
I think I'm stable for now. And I know it's only day 70. What is this magical number you have? Gods help me if we're looking at triple digits. He tucks my hair behind my ears.
76.
It's twice Barlow's longest stretch without draining after his first significant channeling. The cliff incident. I didn't want to get your hopes up, but I figure that making it 76 days will indicate that I can stall the progression. I blink.
3 days?
My hopes don't just rise, they soar. I told myself I'd wait until day 76 to show up at your door, but Sigale changed course once I realized if I could keep control beyond the wards. He leans in, hovering inches above my mouth.
Then you can keep control with me?
I shamelessly finish the sentence the way I want it to end. My breath catches when icy cold water drips onto my collarbone, doing nothing to dispel the rising temperature of my body this close to his.
Under the right circumstances,
he nods, then retreats a step, stripping off his soaked flight jacket, and I follow suit, shrugging out of my robe so the garments hit the floor at the same time.
This might be as good as it gets, and I want every single second we...
He stops mid-sentence as his gaze rakes over the full length of me with blatant, palpable hunger, warming every inch of my skin that it touches.
Oh, fuck,
he groans.
What would those circumstances be?
My heart starts to race. Whatever he wants, whatever he needs, it's his. I'm his.
Are you wearing?
He lifts a hand toward me, then pulls it back, clenching his fist.
The nightdress you had made for me?
Yes.
Don't get distracted.
What circumstances? I repeat, then drag my tongue over my swollen lower lip. That kiss wasn't nearly enough. I'm starved for him, and if he's ready, I'm happily willing to feast.
Not distracted.
Obsessed. You look. His eyes darken as he studies my curves like he's never seen them.
Maybe we should wait until day 76.
He retreats and reaches for the door handle. Absolutely not. Open that door and I'll pin the edge of your pants to the wood and leave you there for the next 3 days.
I glance meaningfully at my daggers on the dresser.
We can curl up in our bed and just sleep if that's what you want. But please stop running from me.
I definitely don't want to sleep. He pushes off the door and my pulse thrums as he consumes the distance between us. And I'm entirely incapable of running from you.
His fingers spear through the hair at the nape of my neck and he tugs, tilting my face toward his.
Even when I'm not entirely me, whatever I am still craves you, needs you, only wants you.
That's a feeling I'm more than familiar with.
I love you too.
I brace my hands on his chest, my fingertips grazing the patches of soaked fabric near his collar as I surge up onto my toes and kiss him. The need that had simmered comes back in a rush twice as strong, and what starts as soft and sweet turns mind-blowingly hot in a matter of seconds. Our tongues twine, our hands roam, and everything outside this room slips away, overpowered by what really matters, us. He hooks a hand around the back of my thigh, then lifts. The world spins, and I find the wall at my back as he raises his head.
If I loved you in the way you deserve to be loved, I'd ignore that you're the only form of peace I've ever known and put 1,000 miles between us because Staple still isn't whole.
His gaze drops to my mouth.
Instead, I'm here, plotting, thinking of every possible way to mitigate the threat I pose so I can tear this very translucent silk from your incredible body and bury myself inside you.
Yes, please. I push the thought down the bond and wrap my legs around his waist, gasping at the chill that meets my thighs.
Violet.
His moan fills my mind as he stares at me, flexing his jaw. I decide what I deserve. Right now, my body definitely knows it deserves him. I lock my ankles and accept the cold with a small shiver. I'll have him warm in no time. What risks I'm willing to take? Now, what circumstances, Zayden?
I'm making you cold.
His brow furrows a second before he reaches behind his head and tugs his shirt off.
Mine. All mine.
And yet, you somehow think you could possibly hurt me. My arms wind around his neck as the shirt hits the floor, my entire body drawing tight at his bare chest and that scar above his heart. I want to lick every line of his torso. Tell me what you need so I can have you.
He palms my waist, then dips his head and sets his mouth to my neck. Fuck, you smell good.
It's just soap. Then my mind turns to mush and my head falls back against the stone. Each press of his mouth is a shot of electricity that floods my bloodstream, mixing with my power and pooling between my thighs.
It's just you.
He kisses up the side of my throat, then down my jawline until his lips hover over mine.
I need you to give me the one thing you love breaking.
I force my brain to work through the haze of lust he's creating.
Control. Control.
He nods. Done. I suck on his lower lip and then graze my teeth across it as I let go. You have it already anyway. I'm as malleable as putty the second he puts his hands on me.
If you only knew.
He shakes his head and slides his fingers up over my ribs to cup my breast. My breath stutters as he drags the silk of my nightdress over my sensitive nipple again and again.
My control when it comes to you is an illusion. You are the temple where I worship. I live for the clench of your thighs, your breathy little cries, the feel of you coming around my cock, and above all else, the sound of my favorite three words from this mouth.
His thumb skims my lip before he cradles the back of my head and looks into my eyes.
Keeping my hands off you has been the feat of my life, and you have the power to shred my discipline with a single fucking touch.
I melt and arch into his hand. It's a good thing he has me pinned against the wall because I know my knees would have given out halfway through that confession, let alone what he's doing with his fingers.
Don't touch you. Got it. Do you?
Bands of shadow stream over his shoulders to wrap around my wrists, and a heartbeat later, my hands are anchored to the wall above my head.
Is this something you can take if I need it?
The shadows flow over my palms and through my fingers in a continuous caress that steals my breath. Yes, I swallow hard. It's disturbingly hot, actually. A corner of his mouth rises into a slow smile, and bands of shadow stroke over my legs like hands, pushing my hemline up my thighs.
I'll keep that in mind.
My back bows as those shadows firm along my inner thigh. He hasn't so much as lifted a finger to wield. He's doing all of this with his mind. The casual display of power is even hotter. What else? Because if you don't actually start touching me soon, I'm going to do it myself and make you watch.
We should have done that months ago.
His eyes flare and he rolls my nipple between his thumb and forefinger. That feels so damn good. My hips rock against him. He's hard and right fucking there, just a few layers of fabric right away from where I desperately need him. He covers the peak of my breast with his mouth, using the wisp of silk and his teeth to make me whimper. Zayden, I blatantly beg, my thighs tightening around his waist. All traces of teasing leave his eyes as he lifts his head.
Do you have serum?
In my pack, do you want it? Now we're making progress. He shakes his head. Sigale would eviscerate me. But I want you to shove it down my throat if you... He winces. Fuck that. How many daggers do you have in here?
2.
No need to ask which daggers he's asking about. Make that 4. He unsheathes one at his thigh and sets it on the bookcase to my right, then uses lesser magic to float his other one to my nightstand.
Scared yet?
My lips curve at the reminder of his words from months ago.
Nope.
I brush a kiss across his lips, knowing I won't need to use the weapons.
It wouldn't be the first time I raised a blade to you.
He stares, utterly bewildered, then flashes a grin. I'm not sure what that says about us. Is it toxic? Maybe. Is it us? Absolutely. That we've debated killing each other multiple times and have always abstained? I kiss him, flicking my tongue over the seam of his lips because he's mine and I can. I'd say that bodes well for our future. If we'd actually tried to draw blood, I'd be worried. You threw daggers at my head. His hands clasp my hips, and his mouth slides down my throat, lingering to suck on the juncture between my neck and shoulder.
God, that's nice.
I draw in a breath as my temperature rises at least a degree. He's going to have me molten before he even starts. I threw daggers next to your head. Big difference. Rolling my hips earns me his low groan. If it makes you feel better, if at any time I think you're actually going to kill me, I'll stab you, all right? Just put my conduit in my hand and fucking touch me already.
Holy shit, I just said that.
And I'm not even phased.
No conduit.
His hands flex, pulling me against the hard length of him, and he kisses every inch of bare skin he can get his mouth on. I'm going to combust right here, dangerously close to these books. But at least rain still pelts the glass.
I mean, it's your house if you want to set it on...
My heart clenches.
You want me at full power.
I'm not taking chances with you. He loosens the shadows at my wrists, and my hands fall to his shoulders as his mouth whispers along my collarbone in a sweep that sends tingles of pleasure straight down my spine.
Would you like to hold the dagger too? Or is within reach acceptable?
Don't need it. I am the weapon. I use his very words from the sparring pit and plunge my fingers into his hair, trying desperately to hold one of the most important conversations of my life while he systematically unravels me.
I know.
He ghosts his lips over mine and draws back when I lean in for more.
It's the only reason I let myself knock on your door.
Want to change your mind? He studies my eyes, like there's any chance I'm going to deny what we both desperately need.
Each other.
Our door, I correct him. I choose you. I choose whatever risk this brings. I see every part of you, Zayden. The good, the bad, the unforgivable. That's what you promised, and that's what I want. All of you. I can handle myself, even against you if I have to.
His gaze darkens. I don't want to hurt you.
Then don't. I skim my fingertips down over his relic, relishing in the feel of him, while he'll let me have it.
If I slip, he shakes his head. Fuck, Violet. The way he says my name, part moan, part prayer, wrecks me. You won't. Day 73, remember? I run my thumb down his jawline. But we can wait to 76 if it makes you feel better. His jaw ticks against my fingers. No more waiting.
An excerpt from Major Rorally's Guide to Appeasing the Gods, 2nd edition. While most deities allow temple attendants to choose their timeline of service, only two require a lifetime of dedication, Dune and Loyal. For both war and love change souls irrevocably. Chapter 49.
Our mouths collide and we ignite. There's no more teasing, no more doubt. His tongue sweeps past my lips with arrogant ownership and I moan, sliding my fingers into his hair to hold him to me. He takes my mouth over and over in deep, drugging kisses that have me arching for more and nipping at his lower lip when he doesn't give it fast enough. Stone grates against my back as he rolls his hips, but all I feel is searing pleasure as he hits the perfect spot. Again, I demand, then whimper into his mouth when he delivers. The fever he's worked me into threatens to devour me, and there are still so many clothes between us. His hand glides under my thigh and the rumpled hem of my gown, and he runs the backs of two fingers between my thighs right over the fabric of my underwear. You're fucking soaked for me, he growls. The tantalizingly light touch rouses a surge of power that only adds to the crackling heat gathering low in my belly. Well, the fuck aware, I smirk, rocking against those fingers, and kiss him like I might lose him if I surrender his tongue. Have you seen you? He huffs a laugh against my lips, and then we're moving. I expect to feel the bed against my back at any second, but he surprises me by unhooking my ankles and setting my feet on the floor in between the high-backed armchair and our bed. Then his mouth is on mine again, stoking the fire that already rages too hot to survive much longer. Clothes fly. I reach for the button at his waistband. He breaks the kiss only long enough to tug my nightdress over my head. I shove at the waterlogged leather of his pants. He strips me out of my underwear. If undressing is a race, I definitely win. But he's startlingly quick with his boots. All it takes is one look to remind me just how much I've won. Mine, I whisper, tracing the carved edges of his abdominals with my fingers. I keep waiting for it to wear off, I mutter as he palms my lower back and tugs me toward him. What? He asks, sitting in the armchair and lifting me into his lap. My knees bracket his muscled hips, and my heart flutters impossibly fast. The complete awe I feel when I remember that you're mine. I stroke my hands over his shoulders and down his chest, that by some miracle, I'm the one who gets to touch you. Hasn't worn off for me yet either. Don't think it will. His gaze drifts over my unbound hair and body with a hunger so sharp it could slice through dragon scale. This is all I thought about last time I was here with you. Oh, yes, I start to lower myself, more than ready to feel every inch of him inside me. He hisses through his teeth when the head of his cock slides between my thighs, and I do the same when he rubs against my clit, sending sparks skittering along every cell in my body. Not yet, he says through gritted teeth. My fingers dig into his shoulders. I might actually die if you make me wait. Never said you'd be waiting. He lifts one of my knees to the top of a padded chair arm, then the other, and stares up at me with a wicked smirk as his hands slide to my ass. Grab hold, love. Before I can ask where, shadows tug my hands to the top of the upholstered chair back and hold them there. What are you worshipping? He lifts my ass and brings my hips straight to his mouth. I cry out at the first sweep of his perfect tongue, and it's only his hands and shadows that keep me from collapsing. White-hot need streaks through me like lightning, and power rises to a frequency that vibrates along my skin when he does it again, and again, and again. I'll never get enough of you,
Zayden licks and lashes and sucks like he has no other plans for the night, driving me absolutely mindless, holding me in place as my hips rock for more. Zayden, I moan, pleasure and power spiral hot and urgent, winding within me so tightly that my muscles lock and my thighs start to shake. Don't stop, he sends me right over the edge. Lightning crashes, illuminating the room, and thunder immediately follows as I break into uncountable fragments, shattered by the waves of bliss that come and come and come. Instead of letting up, Zayden slides two fingers inside me and moves in time with his tongue, and the orgasm that should wane kicks into a second that's just as bright, if not slightly sharper. You're so slick. I'll be inside you in one thrust, he says as I start to descend, falling limply against the back of the chair, my arms trembling in the aftermath. Stay right there. He kisses my stomach, then slips out from underneath me. I tug at the shadow bonds, but they hold fast. Fuck, I want to touch him, kiss him, devote myself to his body the way he just did mine. But if this is what he needs, you are every fantasy I'll ever have. His lips brush the shell of my ear and I shiver. He draws my right knee down to the seat and the chair creaks as he sets his left behind me. Give me your mouth. I look back over my shoulder and he curls over me, kissing me hard and deep. He slides the head of his cock into position, then lifts his mouth from mine. Last chance to change your mind. Never going to happen. I look into his eyes. Fuck me. Make love to me. Take me. I don't care what you call it, as long as you get inside me right now. Need isn't a strong enough word for the way I'm feeling, how desperate I am to hold all of him. You can reach the dagger on the dresser if you... He starts, and I silence him with a kiss. He groans, then takes my hips in his hands and pulls me downward into the long, rolling thrust that takes me inch by magnificent inch. Fuck, you feel like home. We both cry out when he pushes all the way in. The pressure, the stretch, the depth he's hitting at this angle are all sublimely perfect. I stop tugging at the shadows at my wrists and grip the back of the chair so I can rock into his next thrust. He starts a deep, pounding rhythm that's as merciless as it is exquisite, and every time he returns is better than the last. Thank God there's a sound shield on this room, or they'd hear us all the way in the assembly chamber. We can't kiss deeply enough, can't get close enough, and our efforts only serve to bead sweat on our skin. I descend into keening cries as he drives us onward, his breath panting against my lips, one of his hands tangling in my hair while the other pulls me into every snap of his hips. That spiraling tension is deeper this time, tugging at my power, intertwining pleasure and electricity until the air charges around us. Zayden, I whisper, I need, gods, I don't even know. I've got you, he promises, his voice hoarse. My power, my body, my soul, it's all yours. He slips a hand down my stomach and lightly strokes my hypersensitive clit. Take whatever you need. Just him. That's all I need, and I have every possible part of him. I shatter, my hips bucking as the release takes me, hurling me from my body into whatever realm exists beyond, then drowning me in cascading avalanches of pleasure. Lightning strikes again and again, and I catch the scent of smoke before Zayden mutters a curse and shadows fly. Oh, shit. Just the desk. It's fine, he swears, and I'm absolutely boneless as he plucks me from the chair and flips me so I'm straddling his lap again. I sink down onto him, watching his eyes slide shut, and I wrap my arms around his neck. My hands... Not your hands I'm worried about now. He grits his teeth and reaches to grab hold of the edge of the dresser. That explains the shift in positions. The furniture isn't the only thing he's holding onto either. Sweat coats his brow, his pulse thrums in his throat, and his abs are so rigid against my stomach that he might as well be stone. Let go, I order, rising up on my knees and sinking again, riding him at a faster pace that I know makes him feral. Fuck, he throws his head back and the muscles of his neck strain. Violet, love, I can't. You can. My hands move to the sides of his neck and I drop my forehead to his. My body, my soul, my power is all right here. You love me. You will never hurt me. Let go, Zayden. I call on just enough power to hum along my skin, enough to tell him I'm not defenseless in this moment. And then I shamelessly take every ounce of how good this feels and shove it down the bond. Oh, shit. His arms tense, and his hips snap once, twice, and on the third, shadow fills the room, plunging us into darkness and sending metal clanging to the ground. He drops his head to my shoulder and groans into my neck as he finds his release. I love you. I sag against his chest, happily limp with exhaustion, and the darkness fades, revealing the room, and the storm raging outside once more. The wood, he starts lifting his hands. I begrudgingly raise my head just so he doesn't worry us into an early grave and peek over the back of the chair. Not a mark in sight, my heart swells. Not even a fingerprint? He tenses beneath me. Not one. I look into his eyes and smile. You're stable. For now, he whispers, but his eyes light up. And I'll take it. He wraps his arms around me and surges to his feet, carrying me along our bed. Are we going somewhere? I hold on, even though I know he's more than capable of carrying me. Bathtub, he says with a devious grin. Then the dresser, then the bed. I completely ignore the homework I have yet to finish. Excellent plan. Official correspondence of His Grace, Lieutenant Zayden Ryerson, 16th Duke of Tirindor, to His Majesty, King Tari the Wise. Your Majesty, Tirindor hereby officially declines your request for a provincial commitment of troops for our current conflict. Having resigned my professorship at Besgaeth War College, I am now in rightful command of all Tirish citizens in military service. Chapter 50. Spring green meadow grass bends under my boots as the first drops of rain fall. I shouldn't be here. I know what happens here, and yet this is where I'm called, time and again. This is the price of saving her life. Lightning splinters the sky, illuminating the high walls of Draithis and its spiraling tower in the distance, and outlining dozens of wings in the sky. If I move fast enough, I'll get there this time. But my legs won't obey, and I stumble just like I always do. He steps out of nothingness, straight into my path, and my heart pounds, as though increasing the speed of its beats will cease it from sinking through my chest. I grow weary of waiting. The sage pulls back the hood of his robe, revealing red-rimmed eyes and scarlet veins branching at his temples like roots. I am not yours. I flip my palms, summoning the power that's come to define me. But nothing rises except my own panic. Before I can reach for my blades, I'm yanked into the air. Icy fingers wrap around my neck, too vaporous to fight, yet substantial enough to nearly cut the flow of air. Pain sears my throat. Asshole. My magic never works here, but his always does. You are ours. The sage's eyes narrow with malice. You will bring what I want. His grip tightens with every word, allowing only a trickle of air into my lungs. Or she dies. I'm through waiting, and I will not allow her to win such a prize. I sweep the sky for a familiar set of wings as I hear her scream, but find none as the rain begins in earnest. He's bluffing. You, I force the words out, do not have her. He drops his arms, and I fall to my knees on the grass, pulling breath after breath to replace what he'd denied me. But I will, he vows, because you'll bring her to me. The fuck I will? Anger cuts through the fear, and I slam my left hand to the ground. Rain runs off my flight jacket and courses over the edge of my relic in rivulets as I flex my fingers in the wet grass, splaying my fingers wide. My hand. It doesn't look like mine. There it is. Power courses through the earth beneath me, ready and willing to annihilate their forces if I have the courage to let go of the impossible dreams I've clung to and accept the fate Zanal has dealt me.
I only have to reach, and they'll be safe. She'll be safe. No, this is wrong. This is a dream, only a dream, and yet he holds me here night after night, fighting through the weight of the nightmare. I wrench my hand from the ground. Wake! I scream, but no sound emerges. This city will fall. Yours will be next, the sage promises. Wake! I jerk my head up only to find the sword of Tirindor at my throat. The sage draws his arm back. My body jolts and my eyes fly open. There is no field, no sage, no sword. Just gentle raindrops hitting our window, the warmth of the blankets tangled at my legs, and the weight of Zayden's arm draped over my waist. The worst of the storm has passed. Filling my lungs to capacity persuades the pounding in my chest to ease, but the breaths against my ear only come faster, growing more ragged with every second. Zayden, I twist toward him and lift my hand to his face. His skin is damp with sweat, his brow furrowed, and his jaw clenches so hard I hear his teeth grind. I'm not the only one having nightmares tonight. Zayden, I sit up and slide my hand to his bare shoulder, then tap gently. Wake up. He flings himself onto his back and his head begins to thrash. Zayden, my chest tightens at the visible pain on his face and I throw myself down the bond. Zayden, his eyes open and he surges upright with a full-bodied gasp, then plants his hands beside his hips on the mattress. You're all right, I say gently, and his gaze snaps toward mine, wild and haunted. You were having a nightmare. He blinks the sleep out of his eyes, then swings his head in a quick sweep of the space. We're in our room. We're in our room. I draw my fingers across his shoulders and the muscles soften. And you're here. His shoulders dip as he looks my way. I'm here. I pick up his left hand and press it against my cheek. You're clammy. His brow knits. Everything all right? Go figure, he immediately asks about me. I had a bad dream too, I shrug. Must be the storm. Must be. His gaze flickers past me toward the window. Come here. He pulls me closer, then lays us down to face each other. A second later, he draws the sheet, but not the blanket, over us and settles his hand on my hip. Tell me about yours. I tuck the sheet under my arm and slide my other hand under my pillow. It's the same one I've had since Resin. Same one? He brushes my hair back over my shoulder. You told me you had bad dreams, but never said they repeated. I have a recurring nightmare. It's nothing. Thunder booms in the distance, and he stays quiet, waiting for me to continue. It's usually in a field, and there's a battle in the distance. I can hear Andarna scream, but I can't get to her. My throat tightens, and I lift my hand to his chest. The sage is there, and he always levitates me like I'm nothing heavier than a pocket watch, and I can't kick or scream or move. I'm just stuck there as he threatens me. He tenses. You're sure it's the sage? I nod. He held the sword of Tirindor to my throat after demanding I bring him something. It's like my subconscious is trying to warn me that they're going to use you against me. What else? His heart starts to pound beneath my fingers. I blink, trying to remember. I can't explain how I know, since I've only ever seen it from a distance. But the last couple of times we've been near Dreythus. Are you sure? His eyes widen. What did it look like? It's usually pretty dark, but I could make out tall city walls on a raised plateau and a central spiraling tower. That's Dreythus. His breathing picks up again. What's wrong? I slide my hand to the side of his neck. What else? He palms my hip. He's oddly intense about this, but if it helps him talk through whatever's plagued him while he slept, then I'll play along. Tonight was weird. Different. How? When he dropped me, I had this second where I thought about channeling from the earth, and when I looked down, my gaze slides to his relic. I had a relic on my left wrist, right where yours all start, and my hand didn't look like mine. Now that I'm thinking about it, it looked like yours. Who knows? What was yours about? He stares at me silently, and worry creeps up my spine.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Because it's my hand. My fingers slip off his neck. I just said that. He sits up and I mirror the motion, holding the sheet to my chest.
It's my hand, he repeats. You were in my dream.
It's not possible, is it? 2 hours later, I've told him about every dream I can remember with the sage, and Zayden's had every single one. There has to be a reasonable explanation. You think we're sharing the same dream? I ask slowly, sitting in the middle of our bed with a blanket wrapped over my shoulders, watching him pace the short length of our bedroom in his sleeping pants. The move reminds me of Sigail on Hedotis. Is sharing dreams even possible? Some effect of our bond? No, they're my dreams. He rubs the skin beneath his lower lip. I've had them at least once a week since Resin, and more frequently since Bezgaeth. But I almost never realize they're nightmares when I'm in them. When I do, I wake up feeling like someone was there, with me, watching. He looks over at me and pauses his steps. Like tonight. That doesn't make sense. I tug the blanket closer. I've had the dream on nights you aren't with me. Nights you were hours away. Maybe it's the bond. He leans back against our dresser. But they're definitely my dreams. You've never been to Dreyfus, and that scenario, it's exactly what happened on the edge of the river when I fought him at Bezgaeth.
I blink. He never talks about that.
The dark wielder Andarna scorched behind the school pulled the same move. I tilt my head. But that dark wielder wasn't him. Do you know what the dream's about? What he wants you to bring to him?